We own this country. We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager. We're here every Wednesday evening between 7 and 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and we're happy that you decided to join us this evening. Interesting week in the world of Missouri news and beyond, and we have a great lineup for you tonight, and it's all going to kind of come together for you. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, everybody's kind of, I think, shell-shocked. You know, it's the middle of summer, which we had a great weekend here in the St. Louis area, by the way. It was a beautiful fall-like weekend at the end of July. But, you know, usually things slow down in the summertime, politically speaking, more or less. Not so this year, you know, on a national scale. Well, everybody's kind of talking about the Wiener event, and we're not going to talk about that tonight. But there are, you know, everybody's speculating, looking ahead at the 2014 elections, and people are positioning, and, you know, on a national level and on a local level and on a state level. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. And there's a lot of news, I think, that is being generated because of that. We had an interesting legislative session this year. Interesting couple of last couple of years have been kind of interesting, but this was particularly interesting. A lot of news buzz in Missouri about our governor this last several months. You know, we've talked about him in terms of his situation, his scandal with the Department of Revenue, and all of the compliance with the Real ID that's been going on through the governor's office, and the bills, the subsequent bills that have gone through the legislature that have been passed to stop scanning documents and taking biometric photos and all that kind of stuff. The scuttlebutt that's really hot this week is about HB 253. And that is the controversy over the tax bill that passed through the legislature that he vetoed. That what this bill does is essentially gives Missourians a small tax break over the course of 10 years. It's not really a lot of money, but it is a tax break, which is something that we haven't had in Missouri for a very long time, for the foreseeable past. So a couple things that we need to talk about in terms of this interesting situation. The governor vetoed HB 253, passed the House and the Senate, passed the House by a pretty good majority. The problem was that there were a few Republicans that did not vote on it, or did not vote to pass it. We'll talk about that in a minute. There is a huge movement in Missouri. There's a campaign, and I believe that the organization that is campaigning for the legislature to override the governor's veto is called Grow Missouri. And as you know, if you watch these kinds of things for any length of time, when political issues come up, you know, so do these little organizations pop up. It's very interesting to note. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm going to preface this as, you know, I am for tax cuts. However, I am always very skeptical when big money jumps on an issue and funds it so heavily. It always makes me cringe a little bit. And I, you know, not that I don't want the legislature to override 253, but I think you need to look a little deeper and ask why would a big money contributor be working so hard and put so much money into an initiative? And here's the deal. Rex Sinkfield. A lot of the average folks in Missouri don't know who he is. Rex Sinkfield is a native Missourian who made his gazillions of fortune in hedge funds. Man has more money than God. He typically funds or has funded nearly everybody in the legislature. He gives money to both sides. He funds them very well. He funds campaigns. He funds initiatives. He funds causes. He funds everything that goes on in Missouri. Rex Ingfield gives money to it, and he gives a lot of money to it. And he has given a lot of money to this Grow Missouri, which was formed to initiate some cattle cage rattling to prompt the Missouri legislature to override the veto. And Politico last week had this to say about this, his infusion of cash. And as conservatives seek HB 253 override, Sinkfield cash surges. In less than a week, St. Louis investor and area multimillionaire Rex Sinkfield has single-handedly infused $2.35 million into a television blitz and ground campaign urging the General Assembly to override Governor Jay Nixon's veto of HB 253, legislation that would slash taxes for Missourians broadly and more specifically for higher earners. Last week, $1.3 million was infused into Grow Missouri to launch and coordinate advocacy efforts urging lawmakers to override the bill. Bankrolled by Sinkfield, the committee is run by Aaron Willard, a former aide to House Speaker Steve Tilley. Along with that, Sinkfield sent $100,000 to the Associated Industries of Missouri and $200,000 to the Missouri Chamber of Commerce as they launched ad campaigns calling for the veto. And on Wednesday, soon after the Missouri Club for Growth announced yet another statewide ad campaign regarding the tax cut, $750,000 check appeared on the Missouri Ethics Commission website. So Rex Sinkfield has just infused this with huge, huge amounts of money. Four lobbyists who work for Sinkfield's own Pelopolitis firm have been registered with Grow Missouri, including Sinkfield's chief lobbyist, Travis Brown, Kristen Starner, Brent Hemphill, and David Jackson. The man obviously wants to see the override. He's putting a ton of money into this campaign. It would be a good thing. Nobody wants to see taxes go up. It's almost unheard of to have taxes decrease in this day and age. I'm sure everybody supports that. I always want to question why. I would like the answers to those questions. I still hope that the governor, I hope the legislature overrides the bill or overrides the veto. But I always worry when one single individual is pumping that kind of funds into an initiative. Well, now the next thing that we need to talk about is, the next initiative that came up, the next issue, let's just say that, the next issue that came up in conflict. Oh, and I just lost my page, the beacon. Let me see if I can get that back there. There we go. The Beacon wrote a story. Tim Jones, the Speaker of the House, has been out campaigning campaigning in general. He wants to run for Attorney General in 2016, and he's been going out there making statements about that. However, he's still Speaker of the House, and it's going to be his job to lead the veto session in September. And he made an announcement this week that he didn't think that it was going to be possible to override the veto with a supermajority in the House and the Senate. You know, we can't seem to override a veto in Missouri. And people have been all over this issue nonstop since then. And Missouri Beacon reported that House Speaker Tim Jones said Tuesday that he might not attempt to override Governor Jay Nixon's marquee veto of the tax cut bill known as HB 253 because, as it stands now, Jones does not have the votes. Overriding this veto would be monumental if it happens because right now, I have to say, I don't know if we have the numbers, said Jones. Tuesday, during a recording of a weekly politically speaking podcast, a weekly joint venture of the St. Louis Beacon and the Public Radio. It's likely that I would not even attempt an override, Jones continued as he discussed the challenges he and other supporters of HB 253 face trying to line up the votes. Now, tell me this. How does that work, that we do not have enough votes to override a tax cut in the Republican Party? Where does that come from? I don't know. And with all the arm twisting that you know that goes on in the House of Representatives, because I can tell you I've had representatives tell me that there is arm twisting going on during the session and a lot of pressure put on to vote a certain way. He can't go twist three arms in the legislature and get the votes to override this bill. Just not thinking that that's how this is going to fly. Anyway, the article goes on. Jones reaffirmed his stance, even if he shifted his emphasis to exhorting supporters to help him line up the needed 109 votes. Jones said that some of the supporters and critics appeared to misinterpret his podcast sentiments. And it's true, he has been doing a lot of backtracking since this whole thing came out. Some thought that I was giving up on the bill, Jones said, emphasizing that wasn't the case. His message, he continued, that supporters must help him out by lobbying roughly a dozen legislators, Republicans and Democrats, who are in play and persuade them to back the override. Fine. You know, that's an issue. But, you know, I think you have a lot more influence in that area than most of us at this point. I would agree, though, that the legislature does need to hear from the people on this issue. The Missouri Torch has done a really good job. I love the Missouri Torch. They've done a great job of covering everything this session. They've got another great article. House Speaker Tim Jones said today that his chamber will not likely override Nixon's veto. Jones, let's see, he's picking that up from the Beacon ad or the Beacon article. And again, echoes all of those sentiments. Is how can we have a Republican majority in the House and the Senate when and not be able to support something that should be the most mainstay issue in a Republican wheelhouse is overriding a tax cut? And one of the statements that I wanted to emphasize on this issue was that for years, and I'm so tired of hearing this, but for years, we were told by the Republicans that we need a supermajority in the House and the Senate. And a lot of effort was put in by a lot of voters, a lot of supporters, a lot of taxpayers to work to get that supermajority in the House and the Senate so that we could get something done, so that conservative values could prevail, come out of the legislature, support legislation, bring back conservative values to Missouri. And now the only thing that I am hearing, and I'm hearing it from Speaker Jones and I'm hearing it from various representatives, is, oh, if we just had a Republican governor. So every single time we hit a landmark, we can't get anything done because we don't have something else. And I'm telling you, folks, I personally know, and I'm along with it, I know a lot of people who are just done with the Republican Party, have been staunch Republicans for years and years and years, and they're just done with the Republican Party because they are tired of these kinds of excuses coming from their elected leaders. And I'm tired of these kinds of excuses coming from their elected leaders. I don't want to hear, I may not put the initiative out there to override the bill, because we may not have the votes. If the legislature needs help, they need to come to the people and say, we need help getting this done. This should be one of the main driving forces of a Republican legislature, is to lower taxes. And to be able to hear this kind of thing come out of the Republican legislature and from the Speaker of the House is just nuts. It's absolutely crazy, and it shouldn't be happening at all. And you folks, you need to contact Tim Jones, and you need to tell him to get on the stick. Ask for help if he needs it, but he really needs to get on the stick and work his constituency like he does when he's in the legislature during the session, because we know he works it during the session on other issues. You know, there were a lot of education issues that went down the toilet because there was a lot of arm twisting going on from various people in the legislature. This needs to happen, folks. We need to get this taken care of, and we need to stop hearing these excuses. A couple other things that were in the news that were kind of interesting this week. I pulled up an article off of TechCrunch today. And speaking of privacy and the problems with the DOR, and we're all kind of watching the national NSA issue, there was a great article on TechCrunch today. NSA Project X Keyscore collects nearly everything you do on the internet. And it seems like every single day there's another situation that our privacy rights have been violated. And this is another great example. Further leaks have revealed an NSA project called X Keyscore that, with a few keystrokes, can give an analyst access to nearly everything a user does on the internet, from chat sessions to email to browsing habits. The system requires an email because many behaviors online are completely anonymous, and it is only via some sort of identifier, a username and domain, that the system can scour the database of collected internet traffic and metadata. As Snowden said to The Guardian on June 10th, I, sitting at my desk, could wiretap anyone from you or your accountant to a federal judge or even the president if I had a personal email. X Keyscore is how it's done. The system is available to NSA analysts and can be accessed without a warrant. According to training manuals produced in 2010, the system requires analysts to request data on certain individuals. The system then scans traffic beginning and terminating the United States using keyword searches. The system can also search Facebook comments as well as other social media data. The data is not permanent because the system gathers billions of records a day. The data can store it for at most a few days. The NSA claims that these searches, which can pinpoint communications between people online and over the phone and find mention of certain terms and names in blog posts, emails, and other shared content, are completely audited and are aimed at overseas targets, although American nationals are often swept in during the intelligence gathering. X Keyscore is used as a part of NSA's lawful foreign signals intelligence collection system, said the NSA to The Guardian. Allegations of widespread, unchecked analysis access to NSA collection data are simply not true. That's via The Guardian. Really? I'm not wondering about that. You know, last week we talked a little bit about when Marinka Peshman was on about getting some Freedom of Information requests gathered on, you know, just exactly what is the NSA gathering on you, and we may follow up with that idea. I'm going to try to see if I can work on that over the next week and get you some more information on that. Folks, we have a pretty interesting, pretty great lineup for you tonight. Again, we're going to be talking about Common Core. We have Shane Vanderhart from Truth in American Education. He's going to be in the St. Louis region a little bit later in August. And he's going to come on and discuss some issues with us about Common Core. I know he's done a lot of great work with our friend Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel of Missouri Education Watchdog and Missouri Against Common Core. And he's going to be on with us in a few minutes. And there's another issue brewing out there, and it's gotten a little press over the months, but it's just really bubbling under the surface. And it's been something that's been going on here in the St. Louis area for a long time, but it really affects everybody. And actually, I think this is eventually going to be a nationwide problem. This is so huge. And this is it's about the Westlake landfill here in the St. Louis area. As you know, a lot of people know that there's a lot of nuclear waste that has been stored in this area for a very long time. Well, there's a landfill in this area that's about ready to catch on fire, literally. The secrets that have been kept for so long have been uncovered and exposed by these folks that are watching this Westlake landfill issue. And they're going to be on with us tonight and for the next several weeks to kind of give us a history and an update on really what's happening with this landfill project and why this is potentially so very dangerous for not only the folks here in the St. Louis area, but the folks beyond. I mean, we're storing nuclear waste here, and it's not necessarily neatly contained. So we'll have all of the details from those folks in later on in the program. So, but right now we are going to take a quick break, and we will be back on with Shane Vanderhart. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And when you get ready to hire somebody, you need to check against the federal database to make sure the numbers on the cards aren't forged or real. But what really Congress needs to do is to use a biometric technology to create a new tamper-proof identification card for every legal foreign worker. That's what we need. We need a tamper-proof card.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and we are joined this evening by Shane Vanderhart. Shane has got his irons in a lot of fires. He works with Truth in American Education, which is why we have him here tonight. He's the author of Caffeinated Thoughts, and he's also the proprietor, founder, president of 415 Communications, a media promotion company. But thank you, Shane, for coming on and speaking with us tonight.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
You really do have a lot of stuff going on.
I do.
You're
they
busy
all
guys.
Kind of, they all kind of wrap into one another of those, so they complement one another. So it's great. CaffeinatedThoughts.com got my start into blogging, and that kind of morphed into other things. So, yeah,
well,
it's been a wild ride.
Yeah. Well, you are heavily entrenched. You used to be a school teacher.
I was a junior high history teacher and a dean of students at a private Christian school in Indiana for a year. I actually started out in college as an education major, and then actually turned things upside down, and I had gone to youth ministry for the last 20 years before launching my company. So I've done a good number of things, but I do have exposure into now into the private schools, as well as I've been a substitute teacher at public schools as well.
So I'm guessing that's what fueled your passion for education
in the
Common Core?
Yeah, that, and I just, you know, I care about my kids. My wife and I, we homeschool, but, I'm concerned about this next generation, the generation to follow. I'm concerned about the quality of education that they have, which is one of the reasons why we homeschool as well, is because of our wanting to keep our kids from being indoctrinated in government schools. But we also understand, too, that we need to help promote a quality education for all kids. Not every family can homeschool. Not every family can send their kids to public or to a private school. So it's imperative that we have quality public education as well. And what I see with the Common Core State Standards is it's really you're really seeing a race to the middle with these standards. I think it's really they're not rigorous as we're told. They're not quality as we've been told. And just the fact they're saying they're common and they're common in 46 mm-hmm. states, it really takes choice out of the equation. If everybody's teaching the same, you know, the same standards, and if everybody is is forced to get curriculum that's aligned to those standards, and everybody's having to do standardized tests that's aligned to those standards, you really you take a lot of flexibility out of education, I believe. And
yeah.
And so that, I mean, there's a good variety of things or reasons why I'm opposed to the Common Core, but the main thing is I just don't believe education policy should be centralized, and I see the centralization occur, and it's occurred in my own home state of Iowa. And frankly, I've seen the quality of public education decline in Iowa as a result, not improve. So I think things are best done at the local level. So
right.
When you have these Common Core state standards that are being pushed by the federal government, that even takes that takes even further away from home. So
sure.
Parents lose influence, and you know, ultimately we need to have a voice in these discussions. So one of the things, too, that really, I guess, irked me about the Common Core as I started learning about it a couple of years ago was how that was implemented. You know, 46 states signed on to this thing. Some of these
right.
states signed up, but sight unseen. No state legislature voted in favor of these. And last time I checked, we live in a constitutional republic. We have representative government. These types of decisions should not be made by unelected boards. Even if your state board is elected, it's still that's not the type of representation that we should have when it comes to education policy. So
yeah, that's not what we bought into. Exactly,
no.
It's not what we bought into when we elected our state reps. Not at all.
Absolutely.
Or
absolutely.
Our governor.
And and really, what we've seen with Common Core is it's executive power off the chain. You have these state board of educations, boards of education signing on to these, governors, you know, obviously signing off on them, and we the people, you know, totally lost our voice in the discussion.
Well, let's talk a little bit, because I'm assuming that you're coming here to the area to kind of help. There's been a huge push over the last 6, 8, 9 months on educating people about what Common Core is. I know that you and other people have been working diligently for years, actually, to try to get the information out about Common Core, but it's just now become something that's a little bit more mainstream just in the last several months. Okay, with the understanding, and you said something a few minutes ago that kind of struck me. You said that it's a rush to the middle. Let me ask you this, because I mean, I too homeschooled my children. I came into homeschooling because I sat on a school board. You know, I got involved in my school district, and I sat on a school board and saw what was going on. So I pulled my kids out, and rush to the middle is being kind. I think, you know, we are not doing very well. We have not been doing very well in the education department across the country for a very long time. And I think Common Core state standards is making it even worse.
I totally agree. I used to like to say race to the middle because of the race to the top fund, you know, race to the top competition that helped kind of thrust the feds used to help kind of thrust this upon the states. I also call it race to the trough, too, because states went after it because they were cash-strapped at the time. I agree. I believe it's making education worse. You know, in some states, maybe they had state standards that were even more subpar than what the Common Core, you know, is. But I see states like, for instance, Massachusetts that had superior standards with English language arts, and even with math, and they just totally jettisoned their own superior standards in order to adopt the Common Core. Why? Because everybody else is doing it, and that's not a good reason to embrace a set of standards. I think we can be creative. I think states have the ability to – actually, I'd even go beyond that. I think school districts have the ability to come up with their own standards free them up to be innovative – to let them look at a variety of different models, because I don't believe any school district or any parent or school board member anyway says, hey, yeah, we just really want to stink at educating our kids. We really want to have a horrible school district. No. But they need to be given resources. They need to be allowed to be flexible. They need to be able to look at a variety of different standards as a model if need be. So, I mean, there's no reason to, you know, totally reinvent the wheel, but we can do better than what we see in the Common Core state standards, and it allows more input and more voices, and it gets to be vetted by a wider group of people. So I think you have a better product at the end, instead of having, you know, small. I'm trying to remember how many people actually on all the committees total. I want to say 100, maybe a little bit more than that, but 100 or around 100, approximately 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, vetted these, and really only like 5 people wrote them. So it's not education policy should be done.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the perception. Because there are a lot of perceptions, and the realities are very different depending on which angle that you're coming at, from where you're coming. So the perception of the average person as they put their child on the bus and send their kids to school in their public school system where they pay taxes has the perception that they're putting their kids in a school system that is seriously interested in putting bringing each child to their level of greatness, and that's not what Common Core is about at all. And really, public education has been not really about that very much for a very long time. There has been some individualized instruction on some levels, but you know, institutionalized education is not really set up to bring a child to its greatness. Each child to its greatness. They're teaching to a larger crowd. There are ways you can do it, and it has been done successfully decades ago, but it's not really that way today. Common Core now has absolutely none of that, and the snow job that's coming forth from the proponents of Common Core are really trying to keep people from understanding that it's even less about bringing your child to individual greatness than it was before.
Mm-hmm. It's about making kids, in their words, college and career ready. It's preparing kids for the workforce. And that seems to be a push with a lot of education reform models that I've seen. And one of my concerns is that I don't believe that's the purpose of education. I mean, certainly that may be part of what education is about, but I want kids to be taught how to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say it, public education has been really great at doing that before, but I think it's even going to be worse now. And what I'm concerned most with the Common Core is that we already have this testing culture that has taken root. And this is a bipartisan thing. I think there are Republicans that are just as much to blame for this as Democrats, and we're pushing standardized testing onto the schools, and this started with No Child Left Behind, a really, you know, the big push, and now they're wanting to like double down on that, and with Smarter Balanced as well as PARC, you're having these the tests aligned to the standards, and then you have some folks that want to tie these into evaluations, and what this is going to force teachers to do. And if I were a teacher, I'd be tempted to do this too, is teach the test. Teach the test, what you think is going to be on the test. And that's not going to leave a lot of wiggle room for innovation, for meeting individual needs. It's going to be really focused, as a lot of public education really was before. But again, this is just making it worse, is you are focused on the middle of the group. And those kids who are struggling are left behind. Kids who are special needs are left behind, and kids who are gifted and probably, you know, are doing well and need to be challenged, they're bored. So it's not a good situation.
Okay, well, you're going to be in the St. Louis area on August 24th at the Revive Church, 1105 West Beltline Road in Collinsville, Illinois. And what can folks expect? I mean, folks, there's been a lot of information out about Common Core in the last several months, but it's a very complex issue. So there's a lot to learn about Common Core and how it's going to affect your kids. What's going to happen at exposing the Common Core?
Well, we're going to have a variety of speakers, and I'm keynoting only probably because I'm coming the furthest away. So, you know, an expert has to live at least 200 miles away. But I'm excited to hear Ann Gassell speak. She's been somebody I've admired and read with Missouri Education Watchdog, as well as Gretchen. Then Beth Halas, I think I'm pronouncing her last name right, Halas Illinois Freedom Coalition, as well as Joyce Landry. I believe they're both with Illinois Freedom Coalition as well.
Yes.
They both came up to write No Common Core Illinois .org, I believe is the URL. They're going to be speaking, as well as David Smith from the Illinois Family Institute, and we're going to hopefully just chip away at some of the talking points and the rhetoric that people might be hearing from the media, as well as from their elected, or at least from the governor's office or their school board members, their administrators, because they're all kind of given a sheet of talking points that they're using. Hey, rah-rah, Common Core, this is going to be great. One thing we'll hear over and over and over and over again, they're state-led. And that is a complete fallacy, as I mentioned earlier, because if they were truly state-led, state legislatures would have been involved. But that wasn't the case. I'm not one they'll say they're federally led. I say they're special interest group-led, with the Gates Foundation, with the Chamber of Commerce, with different business interests pushing these standards, funding them. Then the feds are getting in and they're helping fund and spearhead, but this is not a state-led effort. It's really special interest-led, and it's leaving we the people out. So we're going to hopefully take that myth down, and we'll talk about specific concerns that we have with the standards, the content within the standards. I'm not one. I really try to temper what I say, but I don't want to overstate my case with the Common Core because, I've heard people say, they're going to indoctrinate our kids. Well, no, not necessarily. These are benchmarks. They're for English language arts, and they're for math. There's not really, I've read through the framework. There isn't any indoctrination that exists within the benchmarks. The concern some people might have is what kind of curriculum then will be, will the school district use? What kind of, some of these informational texts they're being encouraged to read, what might be in those that could end up promoting indoctrination. And I've noticed some folks get the next generation science standards and the Common Core confused too, which there's definitely some similarities with some of the groups involved, but the next generation science standards really you have to treat separately. Not as many states are connected to that. With those, I would say there is indoctrination within the next generation science standards, but I want to speak truth. I want to be factual. I don't want to personally. I don't want to overstate my case. We want to make sure we point out some concerns that we've got that we have with these standards. They're not good.
Absolutely. And your kids are the ones who are losing out, folks. You're trying to get a quality education for your kids. You're trying to prepare for their future, and the Common Core standards are nothing about that. So make sure you go on August 24th to Exposing the Common Core. Again, that address is 1105 West Beltline Drive in Collinsville, Illinois. Thank you, Shane Vanderhart. Go to shanevanderhart.com, 415communications.com, caffeinatedthoughts.com, and truthinamericaneducation.com. You can find him in all of those places and probably a few more that I forgot to list. Thanks very much, Shane. You're a busy guy.
Hey,
I'm glad
you're
taking time out to come here. Thanks so much. We're going to take
a break,
folks, and we're going to come back with the folks from the Westlake Landfill.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order. because the global order is changing again. And the institutions, the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
And we're back. This is Culture Vigilante. I am Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And so, thank you for Shane Vanderhart stopping in. If you folks have an opportunity to go to Expose the Common Core in August, if you have kids in school, you need to go. You're not going to get the straight stick from the folks in the educational industry, and it is an industry. It's about money and a lot of other things. Go to Exposing the Common Core. It's kind of centrally located here in the St. Louis area. You can go to, it's in Collinsville, Illinois, not that far from the Missouri border. Drop in and say hello to Shane. We'll just go right ahead. We'll just go straight into this Westlake landfill issue. Folks, I'm kind of tongue-tied over this because it's flabbergasting. And when you hear about what's been going on for so long right under your noses and how many people it has affected, it's just going to blow your mind. It's a huge, huge issue. It's been going on forever, almost. And there are a lot of aspects to it. We're going to take several weeks to kind of dissect this and educate folks on it because it's very big. The government is not addressing it, but we do have several very dedicated and very interested citizens in the area who have taken it up. On the line with me tonight is Dawn Chapman and Janelle Wright, and they are working on the Westlake landfill issue. There's been a website that started. It's stlradwastelegacy.com. They've started that website, and they also have a Facebook page. Welcome, Dawn and Janelle. Thank you for being on with me tonight.
Thank you for having us. And you know what? There's a Coldwater Creek Just the Facts Facebook page as well that they can get on.
Okay, good. Coldwater Creek Justice.
Just okay. The Facts.
Oh, Just the Facts. Okay.
Just the Facts, too. And then that deals with, when this waste sat out in North County, which we'll get into tonight.
Okay. Dawn and I have had several conversations over the last week. I grew up in the Maryland Heights area. So I have been hearing a little bit about this radiation and this stored nuclear waste here in the area all my life. I live in St. Charles County now, and I lived for a short time in the Weldon Springs area.
Oh, wow.
I know very much about the Weldon Springs Containment Center out there and how the government has dealt with that, how they're trying to unload it, actually, since they've supposedly contained it. There is another issue that has just maybe in the last few months come to the forefront of the media. That they've had a little bit of media coverage, not nearly as much as it deserves, and that's the Westlake landfill, and that's kind of in northwest St. Louis County area by the Missouri River on St. Charles Rock Road. That is huge, and that's where the controversy is centered around now. Dawn, why don't you kind of give us an outline? We want to go. Let's start with a history now of what this really is and how this all became to happen here in our area.
Well, I'll tell you what. What's sitting up at Westlake Landfill is the oldest nuclear weapons waste in the world. It came, believe it or not, St. Louis played a very important major role in the Manhattan Project. Right here in our own hometown. It's not a history lesson that St. Louisans are given. It's not something St. Louis likes to talk about, but Mallinckrodt Chemical Company processed uranium right here in St. Louis, downtown St. Louis, that was used in the bombs for the Manhattan Project. And not only do we have the oldest nuclear weapons waste in the world sitting up here, we have the purest in the world. You know, you can find uranium in the ground. We don't have a lot of it in North America. But if you were to find just a rock of uranium, there would only be 0.72% of that would be pure. It would be uranium-235. We just don't have it in North America. So Mallinckrodt had to go all the way over to Africa to get this uranium-235 because it's 60 to 65% pure over there. So we have nuclear weapons waste sitting up at Westlake Landfill from the Manhattan Project from the 1940s, and again, it has some of the purest uranium found on this planet. It's horrible stuff, and it has made a lot of people in St. Louis sick. It's almost like a serial killer, if you want to think of it that way, because it didn't just start out up here at Westlake, and it's not just stored, it's just dumped. Some of it's just sitting here on the surface.
Okay,
it's
so let's stop there, because when I lived in Weldon Spring, I mean, it's a huge issue out here in the St. Charles County area.
Yes.
The government spent bazillions of dollars to create this containment cell for this radioactive waste.
You have a pyramid out there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful site. It's actually a tourist attraction. They invite people to go walking across it. There are stairs on it. It's quite lovely. So we know that containment cell is already leaking into the Missouri River. So tell me, how can you just dump radioactive waste on the surface of the ground?
Well, you know what? You can. It's illegal. They did it supposedly in the middle of the night. You know, nobody really knows, because the documents that they have that talk about the dumping, well, they interviewed the people that dumped it. So they interviewed the criminals. The people who illegally dumped it are the ones that they got the information from. And this is the information that your EPA is using and going by, like it's scripture. That's pretty scary. So, yeah, it was illegally dumped. And why they thought that was a good place, probably because when they dumped it there, supposedly they told the people that it was clean dirt. It was clean fill dirt. And then, not knowing any better, the garbage dump then used it every day. You know, they put a layer of dirt in between garbage. So they just dug into it with bulldozers and just it's mixed in with garbage. But, no, there's a significant amount that's just sitting there on the surface.
And how long has this been there?
Today is actually the 40th anniversary of the illegal dumping. So today is its 40th birthday. It's been there 40 years, and when you go past it, you look at all the trees, you'll see the radioactive signs on the fence. Where the trees are is where it is the radioactive area, but the reason those trees are there is because they're helping to hold down the stuff that's sitting on the surface so it doesn't blow in the wind, which it does anyway. I mean, and it's getting into the groundwater because it's buried deep in places, and it's sitting in groundwater, leaching into it. It is, and nobody knows about it. Nobody knows. I lived here for 8 years and had no idea.
Okay,
not
so
a place. Yeah.
On your website, St. Louis, STL Rad Waste Legacy.com, you have a map. It's a St. Louis Cancer Cluster map, and we've seen that before. I think some KSCK did a story on it a few months back. Tell me about this cancer cluster.
You know, I'm going to let Janelle tell you about that. Janelle is the one who did that map, and she's the one who has all the information on that.
Hi. Yes, that map originated from the data that was collected through the Facebook site that Dawn mentioned called Coldwater Creek, Just the Facts, Please. Like Dawn mentioned, the Westlake nuclear weapons waste, similar to that area, people not knowing, there also were two huge piles close to the airport, northeast to the airport, that basically sat out in large mountains, if you will, some in barrels. Some of the waste was in barrels, some was just sitting out in dirt piles. It looked like dirt, but it was not. And that sat out beginning in the 1940s. And that was including all sorts of things like what Dawn mentioned with uranium-235, also thorium-230, and several other radioactive elements. And that blew in the wind all over the North County area, as well as areas directly east of those piles, like Ferguson and Berkeley, Bellwood. But again, it also, if you look at the wind patterns from Lambert-St. Louis Airport, you can see it would have traveled to Overland and St. Anne, as well as north then to the Florissant area, Spanish Lake, and Hazelwood. So basically, on our site, we started asking for people to share information because several of us noted that we had a lot of friends and family coming down with rare cancers, and they did not have lifestyle habits that would have produced those cancers when you start reading about them. In addition, several cancers that were being diagnosed, if you read about them, you've learned that they are caused 90% of the time from ionizing radiation exposure. And we noticed a lot of people in our age range started having children that had cancer, leukemia, brain cancer, very unusual things. So we thought, let's start aggregating this information because it's just statistically not possible that this small population would have this much disease that's so unusual. We also had conjoined twins, babies born without eyes and ears and limbs being reported. So people self-reported on the Coldwater Creek Just the Facts Please Facebook page. And data started coming in pretty steadily. The site has just grown more and more over time. Back in January, it was January 20th, we did a cutoff of the data, and we had 750 cases of these odd cancers and health issues, birth defects reported. So then what I did is I created a spreadsheet for Lisa Zygmunt that was on her show, on her investigative analysis, showing the cancer and disease by zip code that had come through our site thus far, and then we mapped that. To this point, since the Lisa Zygmunt presentation on January 31st, we have more than 3,000 cases that have come in. What we did is as soon as Lisa had her report, we realized this was way worse than we ever expected. It's been horrific. And Diane Whitmore-Schanzenbach, a friend from McClure North High School, she is a professor at Northwestern University, and she and some of her colleagues at Northwestern came up with a SurveyMonkey that we have now on our site that's private. But before the Lisa Zygmunt interview, people were just out there on the wall of our site publicly proclaiming what they had experienced, and a lot of people did not feel comfortable doing that. In addition, when we want to have an official scientific study done, they will not really work with anecdotal data like that. You need to have, you know, what years did you live at this address? What specific address was it? What exact diagnosis did you have? What year were you diagnosed? How old were you when you were diagnosed? All of that. Mm-hmm. And so Diane and her colleagues crafted this SurveyMonkey that went up on our site. And now the SurveyMonkey has more than 3,000 entries. We're trying to encourage everyone who openly shared their information of the first 750 cases to please go back and complete the SurveyMonkey so that they can be included in future study to have all the accurate information. So I know that was a long-winded answer to your question.
No, it's just amazing. Well, we have another caller on the line. It may be Jennifer. Let's see. Hello, is this Jennifer?
Yes.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the program. I know that you have been able to hear what's been going on with the issues. Okay, don't even know where to start with this. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Coldwater Creek and how this comes into play.
Okay. Coldwater Creek, as I mentioned, the piles that were near the airport, there were two piles, and the government has nicknamed them for us. One is called SLAPS, the St. Louis Airport site, and it sits very close to Boeing. A lot of people who work at Boeing are familiar with that site, and it also sat across the street from some ball fields that a lot of Boeing employees used to play ball on, as well as Quarry Leagues in Berkeley and things like that. So that's one site, and it sits adjacent to the headwaters of Coldwater Creek.
Is it exposed or is it contained?
Both. There were barrels, but they were leaking. In addition, we have pictures that people have provided beyond the barrels. There were piles of this, and it looks like dirt. I mean, you would think this is just dirt. So kids were playing on it, watching airplanes. People have stories of again, climbing on it with their kids and watching the airplanes take off. And this was, again, adjacent to the airport and Boeing. And, again, every time it rained, the water would run down this pile and then wash into the Coldwater Creek near the headwaters. That creek then flowed north, okay? And there was a second pile. A lot of the waste from the original slaps pile that the government coined that word for us, they started another pile off of Laddie Avenue just a few blocks away, and that pile is called HISS, which stood for Hazelwood Interim Storage Site. And there they actually spread this stuff out to dry it out, because then at that point it was realized there was value in this waste. It was hot, it was radioactive, and various companies then were trying to purchase this waste. And it's from that Hazelwood Interim Storage Site that a lot of that hot radioactive waste ended up being moved over illegally to West Lake. But concerning the Coldwater Creek angle of it, every time it rained, again, you had the slaps pile washing into the creek, and then you had the HISS pile on Laddie Avenue also washing into the creek, and then the creek flowed north all throughout Florissant, Hazelwood, Blackjack, Spanish Lake. And that's in addition to the wind blowing those, the dirt that was on the piles, the radioactive hot dirt, throughout the atmosphere. And then one final thing to explain is that creek flooded frequently in Florissant and Hazelwood and Blackjack. And so every time that flood or the creek flooded, you had these floodwaters that included thorium-230, uranium-235, and all these other items. But then when that water would recede and the wind would blow, you have that in the dust that's going all over that area.
And to piggyback what she just said about the pile sitting out at Laddie, this is Dawn, there's something really important to remember. You know, you think of piles of dirt, right? You think of construction, how dusty it gets when you see, bulldozer going through dirt and stuff. Some of the piles that sat out at Laddie, because like Janelle said, they were valuable, they were what's called raffinate. They're basically ground up uranium, and it is so fine. It's finer than powdered sugar. It's almost like flour. If you can imagine holding a handful of flour and blowing it, imagine what a mess that makes in your kitchen. So if you can imagine a pile of yellow radioactive flour sitting out, and literally when the wind blew, it would really blow. It had the ability to travel very, very far, and those particles were extremely fine and highly radioactive.
So we could theoretically say it's gone beyond North County.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Do we have any indication or information beyond the study that's been done in North County about, how things are progressing with the people there?
Yeah, go ahead, Janelle.
Oh, I was just going to say, again, we have this updated map that will be released soon that has more than 3,000 reports on it. I personally have been contacted by a lot of people, actually in Illinois. I currently reside in Edwardsville, and a lot of people who live in, like, the West Alton area, which if you look at the map, bird's eye view, a lot of odd cancers that are the exact same cancers that people in Florissant and Hazelwood have reported that are, 1 in 300,000 or whatever, those are popping up in some of those other areas, too.
Wow.
Right. And then Westlake has its own set of illnesses that are coming forward and being reported. But some of Westlake, you've got Bridgeton, Maryland Heights area, and, of course, obviously you have what's going on at Westlake and what's sitting there now. But you also have an area, like Janelle mentioned, that's, it's east of Lindbergh right there. So that's like a St. Anne area. And then, those people kind of got a double whammy.
Yeah.
They got
Overland,
from Laddie,
yeah.
And then they got Westlake. So it's kind of like if you could imagine a gigantic, ugly rainbow. Because then, as you mentioned, Weldon Spring, they have their own issues, and they have their own illnesses. It's just a horrible, horrible legacy that St. Louis has.
So So let's talk about, okay, we've talked about the spreading by the dust and the air. Let's talk a little bit about the water supply.
The water supply up here, you know, this where Westlake Landfill is, that is a floodplain. That is the Missouri River floodplain. And, you know, Florissant gets its drinking water.
And it flooded in 93, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that levee held, that Earth City levee held, but had it not held, the very foot of what we call Area 2, where Westlake sits, where some of the hottest material is sitting on the surface, would have been under the water. And the problem with that is, you know, when you think about water, is that this stuff is also buried, right? Some of it is. Mm-hmm. So it's actually sitting in the groundwater. Well, as the floodwaters rise, so does the groundwater. So it actually has the ability to push it up as well.
So, but you don't need a flood. I mean, a flood is not necessary for it to be put into the rivers. I mean, rain every time it rains.
Right. Well, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's just rainwater. If you've ever driven through Earth City, which I know a lot of people have, you see all those canals. People say, oh, we have these ponds. Those are not ponds. That is a floodplain. Those are canals that were designed for rainwater runoff, and it takes it directly to the Missouri River. There is a gigantic rainwater canal runoff right next to Westlake Landfill, and there's no cap on it. The water hits it, it's on the surface, it runs, and then it takes it directly to the river.
And again, like Dawn said, not only does North County get its drinking water just a few right where Dawn is talking about, but that Missouri River water continues to travel down, and that's where St. Louis is getting its drinking. Anheuser-Busch is getting its water. I mean, this is a very large regional issue as far as the drinking water goes.
And at the conflux of the rivers, I mean, people that don't live in the Missouri area, the Missouri and the Mississippi join right there, and it goes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
And if you look at maps of where the Missouri River and the Mississippi River join right there, you will see that the Missouri River hugs the bank, even all the way around. And so, you know, these particles, when they get into the Missouri River, you think, well, maybe they're diluted. No, it hugs the bank. It shoots it straight up and around. It is the most ridiculous place to ever have this stuff sitting. It's, you can't even understand why there's an argument about whether or not to remove it.
Okay, ladies, we have a caller, so let's take a call.
Okay.
Hello, you are on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. My name is Wendy, and I know Janelle and know of Dawn, and I just want to say thank you to both of them for their making the community aware of this extremely important and very tragic issue. I don't have a lot to add to the conversation in terms of science, but I did want to say that I am from the North County area, and I have been personally affected by many illnesses that the EPA will no longer discuss with me because it defies mathematical probability.
Wendy, have you contacted the EPA directly?
I have been in regular contact with them ever since I've become involved in this effort. Carl Brooks is the Region 7 director, and I think that you will find that just even his most recent communication reads like a robot. At any rate, I just wanted to add that I'm calling on behalf of several friends and family members that have died tragically from cancer because of this, and this issue could not be more important to the St. Louis community. And I just want to applaud Dawn and Janelle and all of the other angels that are able to put this together. I somehow knew that something was wrong many years ago when so many people I knew had become sick. And in my grade school class of 26 children, I'm 41 years old, by the way, one is dead from liver cancer. One is currently fighting thyroid cancer. One currently has gynecological cancer. About six of them.
How old
women,
are these kids?
41.
Like I said, we're all collectively 41. Six of us are infertile. Many more have thyroid disease. I had a tumor when I was 31 years old. This has been a nightmare, and to find out that the government has done this literally has been very tough to take. So, like I said, I don't have a lot to add in the way of science for this conversation, and it's difficult for me to talk about without becoming upset, but I just wanted to acknowledge and say thank you for shining a light on this situation.
Well, thank you for your call, Wendy.
Thank you.
All the best to you. Thanks. Hang in there with us and stay in touch with the folks. We have another call. I'm going to take another call. Hi, this is Lisa. Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. Hello, caller. Oops. Caller with the 573 area code. Oops, hold on a second. We're having problems with the mic. I'm sorry. There you go. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I wanted to add some information to this. The current radioactive waste that's stored out at Westlake isn't stored. It was disposed of there.
Exactly.
The problem that we're having is we're trying to get this included in the FoosWrap program, which addresses all the other sites where this contamination is, including downtown St. Louis, which still isn't cleaned up and isn't scheduled to be finished, quote, finished, until July of 2015.
So
and
tell me about the downtown site. I'm not aware of that. Is there a site also downtown?
That's when they did the processing, and they stored it there until they moved it out to the airport site in 1946.
That's the original Mallinckrodt Chemical Works site.
Correct.
By the McKinley
Correct.
Bridge, if you are familiar with the McKinley Bridge, it's on the Missouri side of the McKinley Bridge.
Yes. So the point being is that all of these sites are included in the FoosWrap program, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is responsible for removing and remediating this waste. However, Westlake is exempt from that because there was a broken chain of command and who handled the radiological waste at that point in time in 1973. So what we need now is an act of Congress, literally an act of Congress, to transfer the jurisdiction of Westlake over to the FoosWrap and USACE, U.S. Corps of Army Engineers, to clean and remediate the site. However, we can't get the interest. We have contacted repeatedly, more than repeatedly, every elected representative at every level of government. And the problem is that this is a nonpartisan issue, but all we're getting is the same old stories from all these representatives and all these agencies. Well, we can't do anything. It's not our jurisdiction. Well, we're local. And, you know, the point is we elect your people and we pay your salaries, and you still refuse to act on the behalf of the safety and the welfare. I myself have cancer. I was born up in North County, a half a mile from the airport site. I lived there and played there outdoors most of my childhood life. I have cancer. My family, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, this was in the 50s and 60s and 70s. The insanity has to stop. What we're looking at in Westlake now is this is going to be what North County already has been. So everything that's happened in North County is now going to happen in Westlake, and it is happening, but nobody will address that.
That's just amazing. Thank you. Thank you for your call, caller. We have another call. I'm going to move on to the next call. Let's see here. This is Lisa at Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thank you for your call.
Yes, hi. My name's Tom.
Hi, Tom.
I am calling. I went to the EPA meeting a few weeks ago at Pattonville High School and saw Mr. Brooks from the EPA say nothing, basically, for the duration of the meeting. Basically, what his message was, if he had any message at all, was that they, as far as Westlake, they were not planning to give us a date even when they would have a plan in place to address this. Now, it looks like from what I have read, I've gotten a little more educated since then, and there were some questions I would like to ask Mr. Brooks now if I had the opportunity. It appears that there was a company called Cotter Corporation that was in custody of and ownership of the nuclear waste that was moved to Westlake.
That's right.
8,700 tons of it, which was mixed with about five times that much of topsoil. It was dumped at the direction of Cotter Corporation, I believe by one of their contractors at Westlake, illegally. And this is not a case where we're talking about an orphaned situation where the company that's responsible has disappeared. They still exist. And I wanted to say just a little more about that. Now, the cost to cap that waste, they've estimated at over $40 million. The cost to remove it, they've estimated at over $400 million. Now, the Superfund, as I understand it, the EPA Superfund is broke. They're not taxing companies anymore, so the Superfund has no money. The EPA can't do this job because they don't have the funds. But Cotter Corporation still exists. In fact, it's owned by General Atomics. They're one of the largest government contractors in the country, and they make the Predator and Reaper drones that the government loves so much. They're bringing in just tons of money. They're spending tons of money on lobbying and supporting political campaigns and flying congressional staffers around the world to gain influence. And all this is legal. I understand that. I'm not accusing them of doing anything illegal other than their subsidiary, Cotter Corporation, dumping the waste at Westlake. But I think they should be called on, and the EPA, I believe, has the authority to call on them to pay for this cleanup. And my real question for Mr. Brooks at this point, if I could get it to him, is why haven't they told Cotter Corporation to pay up? It's going to be about $500 million to clean this up. And I think that General Atomics and Cotter Corporation have the money, and they should be called on to spend it.
I agree.
It's a huge number, $500 million, but really in the scheme of things, our government spends $500 million on nothing.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
really.
And he's right. Because it's a Superfund site, it follows CERCLA law. And what that means is that at every Superfund site, they have what's called a PRP, a potentially responsible party. Cotter Corp is listed as a potentially responsible party. So is the Department of Energy, actually. The DOE is listed on there. And so is Republic Services, because they knowingly bought this non-remediated Superfund site, and they agreed to it. It was in the paperwork. Okay, well, guess what? You're taking over the sick puppy. It's your responsibility. And they said, yep. They knew it was a blank check. So all three of them are responsible for paying. I'm not even going to talk capping, because I don't think that's a ridiculous solution. It's not a solution. It's in the groundwater. But the removal, he's right. $500 million to remove it, but that gets split up between those companies. They foot the bill, not the taxpayer.
So,
well, of course, the Department of Energy is part of the government, and that would,
yeah,
whatever the Department of Energy puts into it, I believe, would come out of taxpayer money.
Isn't that interesting? That, you know, you're probably right on that. That's probably something we really need to look into.
Right, because isn't there a conflict of interest between the Department of Energy taking over handling this site,
yes,
and protecting themselves from being having a claim made against them?
Well, right, because I don't know if you know this, but FUSRAP is Department of Energy. So, yeah, I mean, when you're talking about FUSRAP taking over this site, what you're saying is, okay, FUSRAP, take it over. You get to pay for the whole thing. Why would they want to do that when they can just be, you know, they can stay under Superfund and then only pay a fraction of it?
Right. And the Department of or the EPA right now is paid to monitor the site.
Right.
To monitor the site? How are they monitoring
the site? They are paid to monitor the site.
What are they doing?
Nothing.
They're a very bad babysitter.
Oh, my God. Okay, explain this to me, because I'm obviously not smart enough to figure it out on my own. The government, because I know of the Weldon Spring, they made a big deal about this containment site in Weldon Spring. You know, they spent a lot of money. They assured everybody that it was contained. They at least made the effort to make it look like they were trying to do something with the waste.
Right.
Okay, they're not even trying to do anything with this other waste. I mean, it's sitting on top of the ground. It's leaking into the river. It's being blown across the state and into Illinois and God knows where.
The only thing they're trying to do is put a cap on what's producing a smell, because they think we're all going to go away if we can't smell a garbage smell.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen.
Okay, so let's talk about this other thing, too, because there's a fire. Tell me about the fire.
We have one of the biggest landfill fires occurring up here in the country. It's huge. It's the size. There is an underground fire at this landfill, the landfill that sits adjacent to where the radioactive waste is. When I say adjacent, I mean it is next to it, but there is a clear path. There's no wall. There's nothing separating the two. It's garbage against garbage. It could burn straight through. But there is an underground, they call it a smoldering event, and a lot of them will say, well, it's a chemical reaction. Whatever you want to call it, it's hot. It's producing temperatures above 300 degrees Fahrenheit, and it's the size of 3 football fields. And regardless of the argument of how it started, it's there. And once these fires start, you don't put them out. You cannot put water on them. It's not an option. So really what they're allowed to do, they're allowed to burn. In a normal landfill without radioactive waste, you would actually let it burn and the ground would drop, because as it burns, it's going to like eat the garbage and the ground's going to collapse. And then it burns till it has nothing else to burn. And you do.
Okay,
you have to worry about, yeah.
When it hits the radioactive waste, do we get a mushroom cloud? What happens?
Well, our local assistant fire chief explained it, I think, better than anyone has, because Mr. Brooks from the EPA meeting said he didn't know what would happen. What we know is that, you know, there's smoke and steam being produced now from this. And that's what you're smelling if you've been in Bridgeton and St. Charles. That's the awful smell. You're smelling toxic emissions. But so you get it into the area where the garbage is and where
and
the
that's
radioactive
just trash.
Waste.
That's not the radioactive waste burning right now. That is just the trash that's sending toxic emissions into the air.
Right, right. That's its own gigantic problem right now. But if that stuff hits the waste, you know, nobody likes to use the term dirty bomb because you think of an explosion. There may or may not be one, because it depends on if there's methane, which we know there is inside of Westlake. But the bottom line is you're going to have airborne radioactive particles. Basically, what you're smelling now, imagine it being radioactive. And it would,
wow.
It would. It would go up into the air and it would spread. I mean, it would be.
It could go across the country.
Yeah.
He said Times Beach times 10 is what the assistant fire chief said. He said
that
it would
seems
just,
a little small to me. I mean, if it goes up into the air and it gets into the jet stream.
Right.
It's like a,
right.
a nuclear reactor.
Right. It's Fukushima, only it's in the middle of the Midwest. Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Just blows my mind. I cannot
and again,
believe
don't forget
this.
The water. Don't forget the water. If it does become airborne, too, it's by all of that water.
Well, it's all right. Yeah, okay, so the water supply in St. Charles, we know, is affected. And so the water supply in the St. Louis area has got to be affected, too, if it's in the Mississippi River, right?
Yeah. Right. So, and here's the other thing to remember about the Mississippi, like Janelle said, and correct me if I'm wrong, Janelle, doesn't Coldwater Creek, where does it end?
Yeah, Coldwater Creek ends up dumping into the Missouri River very close to the confluence point where the Missouri and the Mississippi meet. So it goes from Coldwater Creek. We know for a fact thorium, uranium, et cetera, was in Coldwater Creek, dumping into the Missouri, joining up with the Mississippi, and then right there you have the Chain of Rocks water intake.
Has anybody done any studies of anything downstream of the Mississippi? Of anything being affected, the people being affected?
It's my understanding they have not tested for radiological substances in the water, and if they do, their big thing is dilution, right, Dawn? That's what
right.
They're hoping for, big dilution. You know, they know there's an issue, but it's going to be so diluted that they feel it would be okay.
Wow.
But as far as official something, you know, that's official, no, we don't have anything on a piece of paper telling us what the test results were. That's not to say that's not out there, but we have not discovered that.
They're not turning
yet.
It over to you. So they're hoping.
I have results from the canals. I have testing results from the canals in Earth City
The problem is that, you know, Janelle and I have had to kind of teach ourselves chemistry, and we're pretty good right now. But this really needs somebody else's eyes besides the EPA on some of the material that we have.
How did you get people to test for radiation in the water? Because I can remember when this whole deal over in Weldon Spring, you couldn't get anybody to test the water.
Oh, you can't. It's in part of the supplemental feasibility study. You have to hunt for it. What I had to do is I had to FOIA that information because they knew surely they had to have tested that water. And then they wanted to charge me $1,000 for it. So they wouldn't release it to me, and so we had everybody on our Facebook page call the EPA and said, give us our information right now. And then they released it, but they released it in a form that you really need to be a chemist to understand. I mean, I can look at it and I can say, I can see the uranium-235 in it, and we know that because that's rare, again, it came from the Belgian Congo, we have so little of it in North America, there really is no established background for it. So to even see it present in a minor amount is a uh-oh, we know where that came from.
Wow.
So, but then again, they go back to, yeah, but you know, it's diluted. But you know what? Radiation, as it decays, it just becomes more and more radioactive. You can say that now, but 20 years from now?
Okay, so which leads me to the next question. Okay, we have all of this radioactive material all over the place. Is it even possible to clean it up? And if it is, how do you do it and where does it go?
We have the Army Corps of Engineers has cleaned up over 100 sites in St. Louis already. 100 sites. Janelle, how much have they spent?
I believe over $1 billion.
Already.
What we can gather already, yes, very quietly.
No. And it's very time consuming. I mean, in fact, you could drive up there and visit the SLAP site, and you can actually watch them in their moon suits out there. You know, they pretty much clean this up a shovelful or a teaspoonful at a time, very carefully, and then it's sent off site to a licensed facility, either in Utah, one that they contract through. But you know, it can be cleaned up, but kind of like Janelle, the story she just told you, how do you clean up all of North County?
Mm.
How do you clean up the entire area where this has blown and settled? You know, that's, and then Janelle can tell you, there are communities in Nevada that are what they call downwinder communities. And they're communities that are affected by nuclear weapons waste. You know, in Nevada where they dropped the bomb, you know,
mm-hmm.
That's what you're looking at for St. Louis. We eventually, and, you know, it may take us years. I don't think so. I think we have the push, and with this information coming out, I think it's going to start waking people up and it'll happen sooner. But you're going to be looking at the only Midwestern town that is a downwinder community. It's
wow.
going to be listed as that.
Oh, I just can't even imagine. It just freaks me. It blows my mind.
It's a horrific nightmare. Horrific.
And
biblical proportions.
Yeah, and you're not getting any reaction from your elected representation at all.
That's why, though, because they know more, obviously, than they're leading on, you know, and we know a lot, but they know what this means for St. Louis. St. Louis will eventually be declared a downwinder community. We've got the same cancers that the federal government already acknowledges comes from this nuclear weapons waste.
Explain to me what that means to be a downwinder community. Tell me, give me the definition of that.
I'm going to let Janelle take over that part.
Well, I'd say I don't know if I'm the best qualified, Dawn, to take over it, but I will say that basically people who present with certain diseases, cancers in particular, that the government has classified as definitely, in their opinion, clearly linked and associated to exposure to ionizing radiation, it's my understanding that there is assistance given to people who are battling those issues.
Right. They acknowledge that these communities, and again, they're all out in Nevada where these tests were dropped, but they acknowledge that because they have been exposed to this nuclear weapons waste, the same waste that all of North County was exposed to, they have already studied it, and they have a list. There are 27 cancers. There's
all sorts of birth defects on there, illnesses, autoimmune illnesses, and it's, if you live in one of those communities and you present with one of those illnesses, yes, you're given financial assistance, specifically enough for health screening for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Because that's so critical.
And it's interesting because if you start looking into the Downwinders classification cancers as well as the Veterans Administration, they also have a list of presumptive cancers that, you know, the veterans are showing up with that worked near ionizing radiation. We have those exact same diseases. Plus, we have more, because what's interesting is when you look at the Veterans Administration, they're basically dealing with males, and, of course, we have females as well in the general population of civilians, and so you are seeing some different things. We also are seeing, beyond cancers, just unreal numbers with multiple sclerosis and Lou Gehrig's disease, different neuromuscular problems in just very high proportions.
Amazing. Well, ladies, I can't thank you enough for coming on with me this evening. We're going to explore this issue in more depth in the weeks to come. I hope you'll come back, and we'll target all of these issues in the coming weeks and try to raise awareness about this and maybe set some legislators on fire over it and get something done. And actually, you don't have to worry about anything because Obamacare, there's probably a clause in Obamacare to take care of it, I'm sure. Oh, my gosh. It's just,
you know what? And if they have questions, you know, they can visit Coldwater Creeks, Just the Facts on Facebook. They can visit Westlake Landfill on Facebook or STL Rad Waste Legacy. All three of these sites have a place where they can, if somebody is just hearing this for the first time, they can call in and fill out the survey that Janelle talked about of illnesses.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, this is the best time to come together and share information and try to, you know, the best way to get something done is to come together and share information with it. So thank you, ladies, so much for coming on with me tonight, and we'll talk to you hopefully next week.
Thank you so much. Okay,
right.
Bye.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on The Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back, and it is kind of all over. We're going to wrap it up this evening. Amazing, amazing, amazing information given to us by the ladies at the Westlake Landfill situation. We are going to have those folks back for the next several weeks to give us details on several issues. This is something that everybody in this area needs to get involved in. This is obviously the government is ignoring a huge, huge calamity here that needs to be addressed. And it's not going to get any better as time goes by. So if you have an opportunity to go to stlradwastelegacy.com, and those other websites and Facebook pages will be up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org after the show. Thank you so much to those ladies, and come back next week and get some more information about that. Want to also remind you that Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior, is coming back to St. Charles County. If you didn't get to see him in April, don't miss the opportunity to see him in August. He is amazing. And, you know, we had Shane Vanderhart on earlier talking about education and the Common Core. Common Core is not going to be talking free market principles the way that you'll learn to understand them from Lauren Spivak. This is the way they used to teach our grandparents about the free market and capitalism in America and why it works. And he brings in a lot of great history with it. And I'm telling you, folks, it's so interesting. Bring your teenagers to this. They need to hear this. They are not going to get this in institutional schooling. It's August 29th and 30th, and it's at the Family Vision Library. And I want to extend a special thanks to John Thrower at the Family Vision. He's always so welcoming for these events. The 29th and 30th at the Family Vision Library from 6:30 to 9:30. 2020 Parkway Drive in St. Peter's. That information is up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. This seminar is free to the public. There is no charge to attend the seminar. It's two nights, 29th and 30th. Fabulous, fabulous information. Very entertaining as well. I know it doesn't sound like sitting and listening to a finance kind of a seminar for two nights would have any interest at all, but I'm telling you, your kids will love it. I took my daughter to it last April, and she thought it was great. She loved it. It was very entertaining, very enlightening, and stuff you're not going to hear in an institutional school. So bring your kids, bring your husband, bring your wife, bring your brothers and sisters. Everybody come on out August 29th and 30th to the Family Vision Library. And just before we wrap it up, I want to remind you, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and hit that Secret Santa tab. This is the last day of July, so this is the last day of Christmas in July for us here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, but for the rest of the year, we're trying to raise enough funds so that we can help some Missouri families pay off their layaway accounts at Christmas. We go at various places across the state, various retail outlets across the state on Christmas Eve, and toys that were not able to be paid for will get paid for by Missouri Grassroots Coalition through your generous donations. Every cent that you donate to this initiative goes straight to paying off those layaway accounts. We don't skim off the top of any of that money that's donated. So please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, hit the Secret Santa tab, and send us whatever you can, just a couple of bucks. And last year we raised $1,000. This year we want to raise $2,000. A couple of bucks from everybody listening today will take care of that. So MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, hit the Secret Santa tab, PayPal, check our money order. It's very easy. Thank you so much. And go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You can see my posts up there on the home page there. You can go to culturevigilante.wordpress.com to read my posts, examiner.com. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and I also write for politichicks.tv. And so until next week, folks, where we will have another great lineup for you, we will have the folks back from the Westlake Landfill Initiative. We're going to have Pastor Danny Holiday with us. There is another event over in Alton, Illinois, Elijah P. Lovejoy First Amendment event. Pastor Danny Holiday will be with us to talk about that event. A lot of history, great history that goes along with that event on that day. And we will have Larry Connors with us next week. There was a big, if you're from the area, there was a big controversy just a few months back. He was released. He's been a longtime media person here in the St. Louis area, and he was released from his position here in St. Louis under some controversy. We will discuss that a little bit and maybe talk about Larry's plans for the future and see what he's got going. He's a pretty conservative guy, although you would have never really known it. He was very, very even and unbiased in his reporting. From everything that I could tell, I grew up in the St. Louis area watching Larry Connors, so it's great to know that there's a conservative journalist out there, but very even, very well presented always, never biased as far as I could tell in any of his reporting. So it'll be kind of fun to talk to him next week. Otherwise, folks, it has been a great show. Thank you for joining us tonight. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for information on all the events that we talked about today, and I will have that information up for you for the Westlake Landfill so that you can go to their website and get involved. And until next week, we will talk to you again.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.